Ducks.
From 90.7 WFAE Charlotte, 90.3 WFHE Hickory, welcome to Charlotte Talks. I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Even with households still reeling from the economic crisis, Americans still gave more than $316 billion to charitable causes last year and will surely give even more this year. It's the time of the year that a lot of that charitable giving occurs. In the spirit of the holidays, people are just in the benevolent mood for doing something to make the lives of those less fortunate a bit brighter. Now, it's safe to say that most donations go mostly for the charitable purpose intended. However, as we all know, that's definitely not the case in every case. Even some of the most well-known, time-honored charities that have stumbled at times, and we know about that around here all too well. So what constitutes a worthy charity, a charitable organization worthy of your hard-earned donation? Let's get some answers today from our guest. Steve Caron is the Communications and Development Associate with Charity Navigator, an organization that works to guide intelligent giving. According to its website, Charity Navigator's mission statement says, by guiding intelligent giving, it aims to advance a more efficient and responsive philanthropic marketplace in which givers and the charities they support work in tandem to overcome the nation's and the world's most persistent challenges. Steve Caron, welcome.
Thank you.
Rusty Leonard and his wife founded a nonprofit watchdog group in 1998 called Wall Watchers, and the companion website MinistryWatch.com, which is sometimes seen as a type of consumer reporting website of faith-based charities. Rusty Leonard, welcome to you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Rusty is joining us from near Philadelphia, while Steve Caron is joining us from the New York area. And while we're speaking about churches and religious organizations, Rusty, they are, in fact, those faith-based charities are, in fact, the largest recipients of the charitable contributions Americans make. So there is a lot to watch over, right, Rusty?
Oh, yes. And thankfully, people are very dedicated to the places where they worship and support those organizations. And those organizations have been shown, on the whole, to do a lot of great work for our communities and for our nation. And so it's a good thing that people are very supportive of their local churches and the places where they worship on a daily and weekly basis.
Is it a comfort level? The churches, synagogues, temples, and such will be better stewards with my contribution? So that's the reason why I'm so willing to give so much?
Well, I think obviously there's an attachment just because you know the people. So, yeah, that comfort level clicks in pretty easily because you can see the natural outworkings of what your giving is doing. So if you're in a local church and you're donating money, you obviously see that the church is doing various activities. And in many cases, you know they have a benevolent fund and the people in your church are being helped by that. So, yeah, it's something that people can see very, very close at hand what, you know, the good that their giving is doing. So that's
a lot of the watchdog role that Charity Navigator performs, Steve Caron, is over national and international organizations. But there, to what Rusty is talking about, you can see it because most people are giving to their local churches, local faith-based charities, local synagogues and temples. Makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Let me get you both to give us an overview. An overview, if you will, on the health of charitable giving right now. I did mention in the introduction that Americans gave $316 billion last year. So is that in fact, a very healthy, charitable America?
Yeah, I'd say it's a pretty charitable America. We haven't quite gotten back to the levels of the pre-economic downturn, but it's definitely been increasing. This year it'll probably be flat, but I'd say we're headed in the right direction.
You think it will exceed $316 million, or when you say flat, it will be right in that neighborhood?
Yeah, I'd say right in that neighborhood, maybe a little bit higher.
Is it impressive that we've gone through a long recession and that the recovery seems to be occurring, but at a much slower pace than many
anticipated, that in fact staying flat under those circumstances is actually a good thing.
Steve? Yeah, I'd definitely say it's a good thing. It shows the how Americans are so charitable and resilient to anything that comes their way.
Well, let's state some obvious here. Rusty Leonard, talk a little bit about why this is the busiest time of the year for charitable giving.
Well, first, let me go back to your last question, too, and just let people know and congratulate Americans for being reportedly the most charitable people in all the world. There's been a study done by a giving organization that we highlighted on our website at MitchellWatch.com a few weeks back that highlighted Americans, based on three different measures, Americans were the most generous in the world. And looked at, you know, basically they surveyed 1,000 to 2,000 people in most countries in the world and determined what they did from their giving habits and determined that we all deserved a good pat on the back. Now, on the actual giving of money component of that survey, we only came in 13th in the world. So we could do a little bit better on the giving of money. We were much more likely to help somebody who we came across in the street who was in need than many other people and other measures of charitable efforts. But I just want to point out, I want to make sure everybody knew that they're doing a pretty good job. Not that we couldn't do better. Obviously, we'd like to see that $316 billion go up significantly higher and do even more good works. And we are the wealthiest nation in the world, so we have good reason to be able to support that kind of higher giving.
Could you put that statement that you just made, though, about us being far down the list in terms of giving nations? Is it based on a percentage or an actual dollar figure?
Based on a percentage of the income. So it was something. And right now, I believe the number is about 1.9% of income is typically given. And, you know, that doesn't vary too much from year to year. It's very encouraging, too, that during difficult times, those numbers haven't fallen off the cliff, that people have continued to try to give even when their own pocketbooks are pretty squeezed. So it's a pretty good attitude that most Americans seem to have.
And from a percentage basis, how much does the average American give to a charitable cause? Steve Caron?
I mean, that definitely varies. I don't have a percentage, to be honest, to give you, but
it's that 1.9%. It's that 1.9% number that some of the studies have showed that around, you know, roughly, if you want to round it off, make it 2% to make it easy for people to understand. It's around 2%. It varies a little bit. It might go down as low as 1.6 in a bad year, and goes a little bit higher than 2%. Basically, it's hovers around that level.
Whereas obviously, people in other countries, Rusty Leonard, give what? A percentage of what? Of their income?
I don't have those numbers on the tip of my tongue here, but I would imagine it would be probably in the 2 to 3% range that makes us come in 13th place in the world in terms of giving us percent of income.
And either of you tackle this one. Who's receiving the money? Who's receiving the contributions? I think we established off the top, two-thirds of it is going to churches, temples, synagogues, religious organizations.
Educational organizations definitely get a big share of that, as well as healthcare organizations are definitely big recipients.
And who's giving? The individual? The individual, is it individuals, foundations, corporations, or what?
All the above.
Right.
Yeah, you're going to find giving coming from all those places. Obviously, foundations are, because this is such a wealthy nation, because such great fortunes have been created, you've seen an increase in the amount of foundations that are being established, and therefore an increase in that kind of giving. The Warren Buffett and Bill Gates, two of the richest men in the entire world, have started something called the Giving Pledge, where they encourage the ultra wealthy people of the world to kind of commit to giving at least half of their wealth away, if not in their lifetimes after they pass away. And they've had, you know, pretty good success at convincing people to do that and to make that commitment. And that typically comes through foundations. There's also been a growth in kind of public foundations where you don't have to set up your own foundation, but you can set up a donor advised fund at something like the National Christian Foundation in the Christian world, or another group called Waterstone. And that makes it easy for the individual, the person who's not Bill Gates or Warren Buffett, to be able to set up kind of their own foundation. So people are starting to use those types of tools as they've become available, and that's helped kind of giving at the high end of the spectrum to increase. But there's always people at the low end of the spectrum who are faithful givers as well.
And for the only the second time, we had a Giving Tuesday this year. It followed Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday, all around Thanksgiving, and all around building commerce. But it, as it turns out, there were a lot of people who decided that it would be a good day, a good thing to have a giving day of its own throughout the year. Your thoughts about that, Steve Caron?
I mean, I think it's a great way to raise awareness to giving and just make people stop and think about it on, you know, this a random Tuesday that typically giving isn't something that's too thought about. And it's also a good way to get into the thinking mindset coming up to the holidays and to get people thinking about that so that they could decide, give some thought into where they want to give, and as well as to get prepared for their for their tax considerations. So I think it's a great thing. We have a lot of consumer type days where it's all about buy. So I think having a giving day is great so that it get people to think a little on the other side of the spectrum, more philanthropically and about giving.
Yeah, people get a little out of hand, as we see in the television programs on Black Friday and all the wrestling that goes on over the different gifts they're trying to get their kids or whatever. Mm. So it's good to kind of redeem that situation with a Giving Tuesday. So we're in favor of that.
It is interesting, Rusty, that I suppose that most of the giving that occurs to churches, synagogues, temples, local faith-based charities is going to occur on a more regular basis over the period of a year, as opposed to big charitable organizations that benefit from the holiday season. People are giving to their churches and their synagogues on a regular basis, even a weekly basis.
Yeah, that would definitely be true. And so that's a more consistent giving over the course of the year. And then there's generally, as people kind of size up their financial situation, their tax situation at the end of the year, they try to determine how much they can give to help others, and kind of in the spirit of the season, as you mentioned at the top of the show. And then they oftentimes will write checks to what we call in the Christian community parachurch ministries that are not part of your local church but are actually a group that serves the wider church across the globe. And they'll generally direct those gifts, those larger gifts at the end of the year towards some of those types of organizations.
Rusty, your group, which began as Wall Watchers, ministrywatch.com is the website, focuses solely on religious charities. Why?
Well, we just saw that there was a need for that. As my wife and I...
I'm sorry, but I can't imagine if I can't trust that my donation is going to be used properly by my church or a local religious organization. Who in the world can I trust?
Well, unfortunately, we're finding in the age of the megachurch that there's quite a few problems that occur even in these churches. As they grow larger and larger and larger, they become quite sizable enterprises, and the scope for bad behavior increases as well. So there's a need even to look after in the local churches now, at least the ones that are quite large and have become really small corporations in many regards. But we actually started the ministry to look at those parachurch ministries, not actually at local churches.
And Steve Caron, it's easy to understand how big, mammoth, giant charitable organizations can run afoul. More so than a local church.
I mean, yeah, not necessarily. When it comes down to it, it's all about how an organization is managed. But yes, I guess there is more room for foul play just once you get on that bigger scale. But that's why making sure that charities stay have good financial health, are accountable and transparent, and are monitoring their results are a good way to make sure that they're not running as afoul.
Okay, very good. Steve Caron, Rusty Leonard are with us. We're talking about charities. More of Charlotte Talks after this.
At 9:20, you're tuned to Charlotte Talks on listener-funded public radio. We're 90.7 WFAE, where support comes from WFAE members and Donald Hack Diamonds, serving Charlotte for over 30 years with fine diamonds, engagement rings, custom design, and jewelry for all occasions. Donald Hack Diamonds, Sharon Road across from South Park Mall, and donaldhack.com. Coming up tomorrow on Charlotte Talks, we hear a special conversation with best-selling author Kathy Reichs, recorded last month at our 15th anniversary celebration. A frequent guest over the years, her rise to fame and success started at about the same time as our show. Also a sought-after forensic anthropologist, her novels serve as the basis for the TV show Bones. From Behind the Typewriter and Into the Spotlight, Kathy Reichs. That's when Charlotte Talks, tomorrow at 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Roman Catholics make up 17% of the world's population, but the Church's new leader is emerging as a global voice of conscience, Pope Francis, his message of compassion, and his potential influence around the world.
That's the Diane Rehm Show, coming up this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, on listener-funded public radio, where 90.7 WFAE.
We're back on Charlotte Talks. I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Our guest today includes Steve Caron, Communications and Development Associate with Charity Navigator, and Rusty Leonard and his wife Carol founded a nonprofit ministry called Wall Watchers in 1998. Wall Watchers then begot MinistryWatch.com, a group that oversees or is actually a watchdog group over local charities and churches and religious organizations and such. Don't want to dwell, gentlemen, too much on charities that abuse their privileges, but do want to point out just how to spot the ones that exist solely to support the administrative cost versus the actual charitable purposes. So, Rusty Leonard, let's start with you. How do you do that?
Well, you use sites like Charity Navigator and MinistryWatch.com. We, both of those organizations will provide that information to you very quickly. So you can go onto their website, type in the charity name, either one of those websites. In fact, if you go to MinistryWatch.com, you can type in the charity's name. If we don't cover it, it'll immediately default to Charity Navigator, so you can go see it over there. So we kind of work, the two organizations kind of work together in that regard. And you can go down and look at the financial statements and see what the ratios say, and if the administrative costs are very, very high, you'll be able to pick that up very, very quickly. So it's a great service that both of these organizations, Charity Navigator and MinistryWatch.com, offer.
From MinistryWatch.com standpoint, what constitutes a worthy charity? What are some of the characteristics that I need to look for as a donor?
Well, from a there's two ways of looking at these things, and both ways are important to give consideration. One is, you know, how well are they utilizing your dollar? So we call that financial efficiency. So if they take in a dollar of donation, how efficiently do they utilize that and turn it into ministry work? And then once they've turned it into ministry work, you want to look at the ministry work and say, how effectively did they do their ministry work? Did they achieve their goals? And so those are the two things that you want to look at. It's very easy for us to help you look at the financial efficiency side of it because those numbers are public and we can, you know, put those through our system and analyze them and, you know, rate them and rank them versus other charities so you can know who's doing well and who's not. It's much more difficult to look at the effectiveness. And that's something I know the Charity Navigator is trying to work on. And maybe I should pass it to Steve to see if he's got any comments on that.
Steve?
Yeah, no, results are definitely the most important thing, because at the end of the day, that's what matters. What is being accomplished? What their mission statement is? Is it being accomplished? We are working on a new component to our rating system called results reporting. That is set to be rolled out in 2016. And so in the meantime, we definitely still recommend donors look to see if the charities are having results. It is much a little harder because the information isn't as readily available. However, just by talking to staff, volunteering with these organizations to see how they are how they are doing, and from, you know, you could read on their website. Sometimes they post the accomplishments that they're having. At this point, that's the best way, but we are definitely working on a component to include that in our rating system. And I mean, as Rusty was saying, the fiscal health, the financial health of the organization is extremely important. You look at the program expenses, you want to see that money is going to the programs. We see 7 out of 10 charities, so 70% of charities are spending at least 75% of their expenses on the program. So that's pretty much the percentage that we like to see is 75%. And 9 out of 10 charities, so 90%, are using at least 65% of their expenses on programs. And other things to look at in the financial health is how much working capital do they have? So if there were to be a downturn and they weren't able to get any more donations, how long would they be able to sustain their programs from today with their cash reserves, as well as the fundraising efficiency and the growth of the organization that really alludes to their sustainability. And then secondly is accountability and transparency, which is our second component of our rating system. So it's really to know if the charity is being transparent and sharing information with the public. Are they open with the public? Are they sharing their financial documents on the website? Is their board independent? And so there's all these factors to consider, and that really helps raise the flags as to which charities aren't as good and which ones really are doing good work. And yet on our website, definitely, we share all that information. It's all broken down. So www.charitynavigator.org.
And it should stand to reason that if a charity truly is going to be open and transparent, that they're not going to have any problem making this information, this internal information about the organization, putting it on the website for all to see so that all can feel comfortable making a donation.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And their tax forms are actually public information. So if you ask for it, they have to, by law, share it with you. So at the end of the day, there really shouldn't be any issues for them to share it.
Steve Caron is Communications Development Associate with Charity Navigator, also joined by Rusty Leonard from wallwatchers/ministrywatch.com. If you want to join the conversation, go to wfae.org/charlottetalks. Navigate around, figure out how you can get in your comment for this conversation. How important, Rusty Leonard, is this whole issue about openness and transparency with what can end up being millions upon millions of dollars contributed to these charitable organizations?
It's absolutely fundamental. You shouldn't trust any ministry that does not want to be open and transparent with you. If they're willing to take your hard-earned money and say that they're going to sacrificially go out and do good things with that, then they need to be very, very straightforward with exactly what they've done. So if there is a group that you're supporting and you find out that you can't get access to their information, or they won't, if you call them up, they don't want to answer your questions and they're dodging and weaving, you should probably run the other direction. This is a particular problem in the Christian and the kind of the religious realm of giving, because if you are organized as some kind of house of worship, the IRS does not require you to give your information to anybody. So you don't have to give financial reports on anything that you're doing if you're organized as a church. And so, unfortunately, some of these parachurch ministries, as we call them, things that really aren't churches, have organized themselves and called themselves churches so that they don't have to report their finances to their donors. And so that's something that we try to highlight at MinistryWatch.com whenever we can, where there's a risk. There's also an organization called the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability in the Christian realm. This is a great self-regulatory group that is unique to the Christian space. And you have to join as a ministry. You join that, you pay the ECFA, they kind of oversee, make sure that you're doing things the right way. There's some weaknesses to the ECFA's model, but they do a lot of great work in terms of forcing members to be very open and transparent with their finances. They require them to get audited financial statements, not just the tax forms, the 990 tax forms. They have to have audited financial statements, which requires a higher degree of oversight, and brings that into the public realm. So that's been a very big positive that the ECFA has been responsible for within the Christian realm of charity.
Well, your point's well taken there, Rusty, because the fact of the matter is, and I don't say this cynically, but most of the scandal related to charitable giving has in fact occurred, unfortunately, in religious organizations.
Well, I guess that would be a reflection too of the fact that the as you pointed out at the very outset of the show, most of the charitable giving is given to religious organizations. So,
right. So two-thirds of the giving in this country, over two-thirds of the $316 billion that Americans give each year in donations, most of that, two-thirds of it, goes to religious organizations, churches, synagogues, and temples. So it lends itself that it is going to be the most abused.
Right. But because of that church exemption from transparency, that accentuates the risk of abuse, because if you don't have to report to somebody, then you have less chance of getting caught, and therefore there's a higher incentive to go ahead and do something that you probably ought not to be doing with those charitable funds.
And you alluded to a few moments ago, prior to Ministry Watch, wallwatchers.com, prior to MinistryWatch.com, Wall Watchers, there's a group that's been around for close to 40 years now, the ECFA, the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability, founded, co-founded by Billy Graham.
That's right.
A little bit of the history on that, Rusty.
Well, it was founded in response to some of the abuses back in the 70s that came to light, and basically a Christian senator in the U.S. Senate went to Billy Graham and said, listen, you better organize your troops out there and get yourself a self-regulatory body set up, because if you don't do it, the Congress is going to start regulating you. So they took that word of advice and they set up the ECFA, which is a self-regulatory body. It's funded by the ministries and it works primarily for their interests, but it has spin-off benefits to donors. So no donor ever writes a check to the ECFA. They don't donate money to the ECFA, and therefore they shouldn't expect the ECFA to 100% be representing their point of view. At Ministry Watch, one of the reasons we exist is because as donors, my wife and I realized that we didn't have anybody representing us fully. And so we realized that donors needed to have a group that would stand in this marketplace of Christian ministries to represent donor interests. And that's why Ministry Watch got founded. But the ECFA still does a lot of great work, principally in the area of transparency by forcing members to have audited financial statements and forcing them to release those to the public.
But as you pointed out, ECFA is a self-policing organization that these religious organizations like the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association and others founded a long time ago for the purpose of making sure that people will feel comfortable giving their donation to these religious organizations.
That's right. Now, you need to know, donors do need to know one thing about that. So oftentimes you'll see the ECFA symbol on a ministry's receipt when you've given money to them. Of course, that gives you comfort, and it should give you comfort to some degree. But you need to realize that if that ministry was to do something wrong and all of a sudden lose its ECFA membership, get thrown out of the ECFA, the ECFA does not go out of its way to inform you that that ministry has done something wrong, because the ECFA is there principally to keep you comfortable with giving generally so that you wouldn't stop giving them and, you know, be scared off by bad deeds. So they don't really make a big deal out of the bad deeds that do happen. They kind of keep them under the rug so that you don't, so you're not fully informed. That's why you need something like MinistryWatch.com to help you be fully informed.
But if a ministry organization loses its ECFA certification, if you will, right, that should be a signal to you as a donor that you might want to look at them again.
Yeah, you may want to get the Ministry Watch and take a look and see what we're saying about it, because we'll give you the full story. ECFA won't give you the full story, and they won't send out a press release saying, hey, you beware of XYZ ministry.
Right.
They just kind of escort them quietly out of the organization.
Now, but Steve Caron, conversely, what Charity Navigator has been lobbying for is federal oversight, federal regulation of charitable organizations. Why?
I mean, it's at the end of the day, the IRS is a governmental body, and it's really there. It would just add extra oversight. I mean, as watchdog groups, we have a budget of about, I think, $10 million in a $1.something trillion industry. I mean, that's minute. There needs to be extra oversight, and there needs to be people really going in there and making sure that organizations feel like they can't, skim the books and get away with things. So there has to be a more consistent oversight, and really the government is the ideal body to do that. They got the size, they got the authority, and it would really make the industry a lot more secure and a lot more trustworthy.
I kind of differ with him on this regard, at least in idealistic terms. Ideally, the way we would have the proper oversight of all the various charities that are out there would be that donors would be more engaged. They would support organizations like Ministry Watch and Charity Navigator, that those would be much more substantial groups, so that we could actually take those jobs into our own hands and keep the government out of it, because they're probably going to more than likely they're going to mess things up. But in a practical sense, there's just no question that at this stage of the game, the donors aren't stepping up and supporting organizations like ours, and therefore, there's going to be a default mechanism to lean on the federal government to try to provide the necessary oversight. The federal government, at least in the Christian realm, has really punted on this, though. One of the senators, Grassley, went after some of the most horrible abusers of the charitable exemption a few years back, started really pressuring them to get transparent and tell people what they were doing, which was bad, and then backed off in the end and didn't do anything and punted. And so while we may want the federal government to get involved, the federal government doesn't seem to be too anxious to do so, and so it really does fall back on organizations like MinistryWatch.com and Charity Navigator to do those things.
I definitely agree with Rusty. I mean, the government's definitely not stepping up to the plate, and at this point, I think the watchdog groups are the best option and should be prioritized going forward.
It seems to me that if you're a donor and you're giving, say you're giving $1,000 this year, you probably would want to give $50 of that, 5%, to a donor group like Ministry Watch or Charity Navigator or one of the other ones that exist. There aren't too many others out there. But just kind of be looking out for your interests. 5% of your total giving might be a wise to donate some of that to organizations like ours in order to help keep the standards up as high as possible and keep donors protected. You've called us a watchdog. We like to consider ourselves a donor advocate.
I promised the fella that I went to the football game with yesterday that we were going to be naming names in this program, and we're going to get to that in just a few moments. Some of the best charities around and some of the worst charities around. But I do want to talk a little bit, Steve Caron, about how something you alluded to a few moments ago when you used the words, capital investments or working capital. Fact of the matter is these nonprofits need to be set up, need to have good business models. They need to be run efficiently as some of the most efficient businesses in the country.
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. They definitely need to be well run. Otherwise, the programs and the mission won't be able to be met. As you know, we all like to think of it as an altruistic and philanthropic venture, and it completely is. But at the end of the day, there needs to be a good business model and a well-run, oiled machine for that altruism and that philanthropy to really be able to shine through and do what it wants to do. As far as working capital, we think it's important to have at least a quarter year's worth of reserves to be able to run programs if anything should go awry. And a lot of charities do keep around a year's worth of reserves to be able to run. So it's something that, again, it's just a metric of a well-run organization that they've planned for the future and that they have that safety net if something were to go wrong.
Again, and a good baseline for establishing what is a reasonable expectation on administrative cost versus actual charitable purposes is what, Steve?
I think I mentioned earlier 70% of charities put 75% of expenses towards programs. So that means 25% is left for administrative and fundraising. So administrative expenses would be everyday things like rent, electricity, office supplies, and the fundraising expenses would really be the fundraiser salaries as well as...
We'll talk about more about that on the other side. We're on Charlotte Talks and WFA.
We're coming back to more conversation on Charlotte Talks in a moment. You're on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Bragg Financial Advisors, supporting Catawba Lands Conservancy on its efforts to protect local land, natural resources, and our quality of life. Details at catawbalands.org. Coming up next at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show, Roman Catholics make up 17% of the world's population, but the new leader, Pope Francis, is emerging as a global voice of conscience. Diane and her guests discuss the Pope, his message of compassion, and his potential influence around the world. Join us for The Diane Rehm Show. That's coming up next at 10, right after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE. And if you'd like to join our conversation today about how to vet charitable organizations, join WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks. We're coming right back.
Thanks to all who supported WFAE this year. I'm Roger Sorrow, General Manager. In 2014, we want to continue to bring you the quality programming you expect, but it's only possible when you support the service you depend on. During our one-day fund drive, we were short of our goal. To stay on track, we're looking for another $46,000. Please take a moment now to call 704-549-9000 or go online at WFAE.org.
We're back on Charlotte Talks. I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins. Our guests today include Steve Caron, Communications and Development Associate with Charity Navigator. Rusty Leonard is founder of Wall Watchers and the companion website, MinistryWatch.com. We're talking about the best charities in America and how to spot them. And let's go down a list. If you got some very familiar names here, the most followed charities on Charity Navigator's list here, Steve Caron: Doctors Without Borders, American Red Cross, the Nature Conservancy, the World Wildlife Fund, United States Fund for UNICEF, World Vision, CARE, Save the Children, Oxfam, Natural Resources, the Defense Council. What do they all have in common, Steve?
Well, most viewed doesn't necessarily mean that they're well-run. It's just charities that people tend to know and have a big name, so people are searching for them because they receive appeals and they're a well-known name, so they want to see if they're efficient. So, I mean, on this list, we have some that are really good that we rate 4-star, which is our highest rating, and there's others that aren't as good that are only 2-star, which is not such a great rating. So...
What gets the organization a 4-star rating from Charity Navigator?
Yeah, so it's having. So we have two components to our rating system. It's the fiscal health as well as the accountability and transparency. So a 4-star rating is having extremely good and outperforming the whole industry as far as the percentage of expenses going to the program. The fundraising efficiency, the growth of the organization, as well as the working capital that we were just talking about before the break, and the accountability and transparency as far as how open they are with their information with donors, the policies that they have, such as the CEO compensation policy, which is a big issue, the whistleblower policy. So it's just to know that they have these functions in place, in these internal controls in place if things are to go slightly off course.
And while you're talking about CEO pay, and we did mention a few moments ago the need for these charities to be run just like efficient businesses, is some of the CEO pay justified if the charity is dealing in tens of millions of dollars in donations every year?
Yeah, so definitely CEO pay, we're not expecting these CEOs that have a lot of experience in the industry, even in other industries, they're well respected. They could be making a lot more in the other industry, in the for-profit industry. However, they want to do some good work, so they come in the nonprofit. We can expect to pay them a pauper salary. However, $150,000 seems to be a good benchmark. However, this is for medium-sized charities. So if we're talking about an organization like the American Red Cross that has expenses in the billions of dollars, we do have to expect to pay, in relation to that. So you have to look at the size of the organization. An organization of that size takes some serious expertise and business savvy to be able to run. So a higher salary is definitely expected and acceptable. Once salaries do get into the $1 million range, though, that we definitely think is out of this world. It's not what CEOs of nonprofits should be making.
Yeah.
But most CEOs in the nonprofit making $150,000 are in the top 10% earners in the country. So they're not doing too shabby either.
If you could give us an interpretation of that, Rusty Leonard, as far as religious organizations are concerned, churches and charities.
Well, again, I think what Steve has said is, very. I can agree with most of that. I would probably argue that in a religious setting, you probably expect to see perhaps a little bit greater sacrifice. Jesus certainly didn't exactly have a big salary when he was going around changing the world, and he was able to accomplish his mission without that big salary.
Yeah.
So we don't want to cheat people out. The workers do his wages, of course, but you certainly don't want to see anything that would just, kind of turn your stomach and think, well, goodness, shouldn't that money be going to help those who are so much more in need than perhaps the CEO of the charity who's using the charitable funds for his own purposes? It's a situation that has to be looked at on a case-by-case situation. For instance, we don't publish the salary information for the charities on our website because we've often been concerned that somebody might look at a salary of a CEO in, say, West Virginia, and he might be being paid $100,000, and that looks, like a reasonably fair number. But if that same guy was a CEO and he lived in New York City or in Los Angeles and was paid $100,000, he'd be, relatively impoverished. So it's hard. You have to look at it on an individual basis and look at exactly what the circumstances are and where the location of the ministry is and so on and so forth.
But let me challenge you on that point, though, Rusty. You talked about transparency being the number one thing here. I mean, now you're qualifying it.
Well, we certainly, if we see excessive compensation, we bring it to light.
Okay, good.
So there's no question about that. And all that is all, and those salaries are available on the 990s if somebody really wants to dig into them. So.
If you want to join our conversation again, wfae.org/Charlotte Talks, and you can figure out how to step in here. An email from a listener. What steps? This one's for you, Rusty. What steps should one take after becoming aware of fraud in a backyard church that does have 501c3 status?
Well, that's a tough one. You hope in those situations that there is some degree of governance in those types of churches. So it depends. Oftentimes when there is kind of fraud in a church, and it's a small church, there isn't any kind of appropriate governance. There's not a board of elders that you can appeal to and say, hey, listen, look, this bad thing has happened. We need to relieve the pastor of his duties and get somebody new who's going to be trustworthy and honest. If there is a board of elders, I mean, that's the place. First, obviously, you should go to the pastor himself, confront him with the issue, and give him his chance to explain himself. Secondly, go to the board of elders, and if there isn't a board of elders, then you just need to go to the rest of the church members and generally have the church itself try to confront the pastor and come forward with the information. But it's very, very difficult, and these are highly emotional issues, and oftentimes the truth is hard to get at. And emotions come into play, and it's there's been a lot of tragedy around that particular issue, unfortunately.
And Steve Caron, that is, I take it, part of the argument from Charity Navigator that there needs to be actual government oversight of some of these particularly large charitable organizations.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The more oversight, the better at the end of the day. Are you referring specifically to religious organizations?
No,
or just
no,
in general?
Charities in general. I'm talking about what Charity Navigator is indeed lobbying Congress at this moment for more oversight, federal oversight of large charitable organizations.
Yeah, it would just be an extra control to help ensure that bigger charities and all charities at the end of the day are more efficient and more effective and not cheating the public out of donations. Every scandal that comes up really, I think, hurts the public's trust. So more oversight, the better, so that we could reduce the amount of scandals.
Here's the problem with federal oversight, though. They don't get any money out of it. So the IRS right now is the oversight body. But they don't, if they find that a charity is doing something wrong, and they come in and they can correct it or whatever, but they don't get any. There's no tax payments that these charities are making. It's not like they collect back taxes or anything. So the incentive for a stretched IRS to send resources in the direction of overseeing charities is like zero. and therefore you don't get very good oversight from the government. And I really can't see you getting good oversight from the government until they have a financial incentive actually to, you know, send the resources in that direction.
A good question here at this point. Do all charitable groups operate under the same tax-exempt status, or is it different between secular and religious groups?
Well, they're all the same. There's different classifications of tax-exempt status, but basically that's true across the board. The only difference is in a place of worship, they do not even have to. Like you, the three of us on this phone call right now could set up a church tomorrow and call it the First National Church of Greed. And greed could be the objective of our church, or we may worship greed, and that would be fine. The IRS would say fine. We could take money, we could raise money, we could go spend it on vacations for ourselves, and we don't have to report any of that to anybody because churches are completely exempt from all reporting if they don't feel like doing it.
And on that note, a big charity that is set up as a church and doesn't file a Form 990 is the Salvation Army. I don't know if you have any comments on that, Rusty.
Yeah, it's a great charity, and they do audit the financial statements, so that we're okay with that.
I think a lot of listeners might be surprised with what Chip in Mooresville is writing in about. A lot of athletes or athletic foundations are designed to shield income, and it's perfectly legal. We're talking about not small local athletic foundations, like the Matthews Athletic Foundation down in Matthews. We're talking about the NFL. We're talking about the National Hockey League, about the Professional Golfers Association, the PGA.
Yes.
Explain,
yeah.
I mean, how does that happen?
I mean, Ken Berger, our president and CEO, has been on air a few times now to talk about this. We think it's ridiculous. I mean, these big organizations, these sports organizations that bring in billions and billions of dollars in revenue aren't paying taxes. And so who's paying for that? Who's covering that bill? At the end of the day, it's the donors, it's the taxpayers of America that are footing the bill for this, for these big sports organizations. So whether you're a sports fan or not, you're indirectly paying for the product that's being put out on the field, on the ice, what have you. They shouldn't have tax exempt status. They would still be highly profitable businesses without this tax exempt status, and it would really help the government in America to get these extra tax dollars, which would amount to a lot of money because these are multi-billion, trillion dollar organizations.
Steve, I think it'd be fair to say that while the NFL itself and the other similar sports organizations are nonprofits, the actual teams are for-profits and are taxed, and most of the revenue is flowing to the teams, not to the organization itself.
And for further explanation, ESPN, on one of its Outside the Lines series, wrote, pro sports leagues are categorized as 501c6 nonprofit business leagues, the same designation as Rotary Clubs, Chambers of Commerce, the American Bar Association. According to data pulled by nonprofit analyst at GuideStar, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell's $11.5 million base salary in 2011 was the highest among all nonprofit business league officers. So the point being, again, that it is somewhat surprising that technically speaking and legally speaking, for tax-exempt purposes, these organizations are nonprofits.
Again, the organization, the NFL, is, but most of the revenues do not reside at the NFL level. They flow through to the very – obviously, the owners want the money, and they are taxable entities. So the Carolina Panthers, whose game you went to last night and had a great time at because they won and got in the playoffs – they pay a lot of taxes. Jerry Richardson's paying a lot of taxes as the owner of the NFL Carolina Panthers.
And the individual employees, i.e. the players who are making the multimillion dollar salaries per year, are in fact paying taxes on their income.
Yes.
Okay.
However, the NFL in itself is making very high revenue from TV deals, from contracts. There's no reason why they should be running as a 501c3. Roger Goodell probably, you know, in relation to other sports commissioners, is making a reasonable salary. But as far as the NFL being a nonprofit, it doesn't really make sense to me.
Well, yeah, I'm in agreement with that. I just didn't want people to think that the Panthers are somehow,
a charitable organization.
A charitable organization. That is not the case. You could easily, from the way we were talking, people could easily be misled.
Although,
and most of the money that flows into the NFL, you can be sure that Jerry Richardson and the other NFL owners don't want it sitting up there at the NFL nonprofit level. They want to get as much of that back down into their own hands, and so oftentimes that's eventually where some of that money goes. There's still no reason for the NFL to be a nonprofit.
Rusty Leonard, I just do want to point out the way the Panthers played on Sunday against the New Orleans Saints. I think a lot of people would be willing to make a charitable contribution to the Carolina Panthers for performing so well. Let's go over just real quickly, Steve Caron, Globus Relief and Matthew 25 and Books for Africa are the top three charities in the United States, according to Charity Navigator. The best charities, I should say. Globus Relief, what is that? Steve Caron?
Steve? Oops, sounds like we lost Steve.
Well, we may have lost Steve, but doesn't surprise you, though, Rusty Leonard, that we have these religious organizations that are, in fact, topping the list of some of the best charities in America?
Yeah, there are really a lot of, while we often talk about the bad guys, because that's just the thing that people like to hear about. If it bleeds, it leads, as they say, right? But the fact of the matter is there's 10 times as many good guys as there are bad guys. And so there's a lot of great, great ministries that are doing sacrificial work in humble circumstances that you never hear about and that deserve to have their names up in lights.
So if I want to make a donation, the best thing in the world to do is do my homework, huh?
That's always a good idea.
Rusty Leonard is the founder of Wall Watchers and the companion website MinistryWatch.com. Steve Caron, Communications Development Associate with Charity Navigator. Gentlemen, thank you both for being with us. And I'm Chris Clackham, sitting in for Mike Collins on listener-funded public radio, WFAE.